presents Hustings Live.
Adam, thank you very much indeed. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us here at the somewhat plush surroundings, actually, of Cowes Enterprise College at the official Isle of Wight Hustings 2017 ahead of the general election. Now, some of you might have joined us at St George's Park in 2015. I think it's fair to say that we didn't think we were going to be preparing for another general election quite so soon, but here we are. I'm Lucy Morgan. I'm the news editor at Isle of Wight Radio.
And I'm Alan Marriott from the County Press. Tonight's about giving you the chance to ask candidates directly about the issues that are on your mind ahead of polling day. Welcome to all of you in the room. You have handed in your tickets at the door and you may have had questions written on the back. We'll try to come to you over the course of the evening for your question. And we'll ask you to identify yourself in advance so we can ask Colin and Annabelle to get a microphone to you.
Okay, so don't worry though if you are not here in the room. We're also broadcasting live tonight on Isle of Wight Radio. Hello to you. We're also streaming on Isle of Wight Radio's Facebook page, which means we've got a phone running somewhere with a video, and also via the County Press's website as well.
And if you'd like to pose a question for the candidates, you can tweet either Isle of Wight Radio, they're on at iWightRadio, or the County Press at IWCP Online, and using the hashtag IWVote. Or head to our Facebook pages to let us know your views.
Now, before we get started tonight, we and the candidates were keen to acknowledge the terrible events that have rocked the country this week. In the wake of the deaths in Manchester after that devastating bomb blast, five of the candidates tonight, Nick Belfitt, Julian Critchley, Julie Jones-Evans, Vic Slouthian and Bob Seeley, have issued a joint statement, and we're going to read that to you. It says, "We're deeply saddened by the dreadful terror attack in Manchester, which took place last Monday night. As with everyone on the island, our thoughts have been with the families and loved ones of those adults and young people who lost their lives, and also with the injured. We've been heartened by the stories of resilience and support coming from many individuals in the city of Manchester. In accordance with the statement made by the Prime Minister, Leader of the Opposition and other senior political leaders, we suspended campaigning activity on the island on the 23rd of May as a mark of respect. For the remainder of the campaign until the general election on the 8th of June, we collectively pledge to conduct ourselves in a manner that respects the values of freedom, fairness, tolerance and decency, values that extremists try but fail to undermine." A statement there from five of the six Isle of Wight candidates in the wake of that devastating bomb attack.
In a moment, we'll be asking the candidates to introduce themselves. Each will have a minute to do so, and in the interests of fairness, we've drawn lots before the candidates arrived on stage, and the initial order has been pre-agreed. And after every question, each candidate will have a minute to answer, without interruption. We're going to be strict on timings, though. Then the candidates will debate the issues more fully. Okay, so let's get started. First to introduce themselves is Julie Jones-Evans, Independent.
Julie, would you like to stand up, take to the microphone there? Julie has a minute to introduce herself, and that minute starts now. Will we reset that again, just while Glyn's sorting out the microphone there? I'll give Kelly 2 seconds to press the button and get us back to zero. In the interests of fairness, we'll start as we mean to go on. So what's going to happen, everyone, is basically we're going to have a minute of introduction. They're all going to tell you why they want to be your MP on June the 8th. After that, we will move on to the questions, and we'll work our way along the line, and we'll take it in turns as we ask questions to go first. So we'll rotate the order of candidates. But I think if we're ready to, we will get going. Happy with the microphone level, everyone? Luckily, it's not me. I don't think they make them short enough. There we go. Okay, so Julie, sorry to interrupt you, but we are ready to go if you are. So your minute starts now.
Let's make history and create our future by electing an independent Member of Parliament. Our island is unique, and I and others say it is time for unique representation at Westminster. Successive governments have failed to understand and respond to our unique circumstances. I have, with input from others, created a plan for the island, a plan for decent jobs, better health, education, housing and well-being. All this is based on almost a decade of local government experience, 40 years of small businesses, my values and growing up here on the island. A vote for me is a vote for a woman of action, a woman who does what she says, someone who's free to act and speak, someone who can be solely focused on working for the island, free from constraints of party politics, listening to you and speaking up for you. On June the 8th, let's make history and create our future. Vote JJE, vote for me.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Julie Jones-Evans, who is an independent candidate. Second up tonight is Nick Belfitt for the Liberal Democrats.
I believe the island is a liberal place at heart because islanders are independently minded. We do things differently. We don't like being taken for granted. It's something that the other parties fail to take into account. The Tories and UKIP are banking on us being divided between Remainers and Leavers. Labour and the Greens, their argument is left versus right, Tory versus non-Tory. I want to offer the island something different. I want islanders to vote for me because I will do things differently, because they know that I will fight for the island. I want to bring back the island's voice. We have lost it over the last 15 years, and I want to bring back those services that we've also lost. I want to bring back the hope the island once had, because we deserve something better. We deserve to have institutions and services that work for us. We deserve to live in a society that put people first. I'm aware that I am walking in the footsteps of great Liberal leaders. The island's MP, Stephen Ross, was a hard figure to live up to. But like Mr. Ross, I am determined to bring the local and national together to give what this island really needs,
Nick,
which is a strong Liberal voice in
Parliament.
Thank
you very much, Nick. That's your minute.
OK, third to the microphone tonight is Bob Seeley, Conservative.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for being here and for listening. I would love to be your Member of Parliament because for our country, I believe that the Conservatives offer the best prospect of good leadership at this important time. And for our community, I believe that we need a better deal from Westminster, and I believe I'm the person most likely to secure it. Most of us want the same things in life, a decent society that allows us to get on, but also one that supports us when we need. That balance between idealism and realism is one that I believe the Conservatives get right more often than not. And on the island, the things that we need, sustainable growth, affordable housing, improved education and healthcare, preserving our island's landscape, are public goods best secured by an MP working with government, not against it. If elected, I pledge to represent all islanders, regardless of political views, and to serve as the island's MP. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Bob Seeley for the Conservative Party. Next up for UKIP is Daryl Pitcher.
Thank you very much, everybody. It's great to see you all here tonight to hear what all the candidates are saying as we lay out our plans for the general election. Let's be very clear, this general election only happened because of Brexit, so this is the Brexit general election. And I'm here tonight to tell you that only in UKIP hands is Brexit truly safe. Theresa May has a terrible record of flip-flopping on that issue and a number of other issues, including social care, which was the latest one. On the island, I think we need a champion. I think we need someone that's going to go to Westminster and stand up for us. We have a great history on the island. We have great innovators on the island. We have a lot of advantages that I think are not being taken advantage of. I think we need a hand up from government, not a hand out. And if I become your MP, I will make it my task to go to Westminster and get us the tools so that we can do the job. Thank you.
Thank you, Daryl Pitcher. And now the fifth candidate tonight is Vix Lowthian of the Green Party.
Tonight I'm here to listen to you and to put forward a progressive argument as to how we take the island forward in the next 5 years as your MP and beyond. Be under no illusions. This is the most important election of the generation since the war. The future looks uncertain. Brexit, climate change, tackling inequalities are evident across our island and the country. But in 1945, we showed what we can be achieved when we work together. Homes for Heroes, Schools for Everyone, and the birth of the NHS. With bravery, we tackled the biggest challenges to rebuild a Britain for the future, and in 2017, we'll have the chance to make big things happen again. On the island, we can transform our energy system to make it the cleanest. We can work with schools and teachers to raise standards and seize opportunities for jobs, the countryside protection, and investment in our services, which electing a Green MP for the island will bring. It's time for a fresh start. With your support, we can make it happen.
And that's the Green Party's Vic Lowthian. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We must get on to number six. And number six on the stage tonight for Labour is Julian Critchley.
Hello. My name's Julian Critchley. I'm the Labour candidate on the Isle of Wight, which makes me a dangerous communist who wants to take you all back to the 1970s. There's been a lot of rot like that spoken in this election campaign. The media has been a bit mad. The media's always a bit mad. But let me tell you that they've got one thing right about this election campaign. This election campaign does present a very clear choice, perhaps for the first time in 30 years. It's a very clear choice between the way that our society has been functioning for the last 30 years and a different way. And the Labour Party is proposing this time round a different way. We're proposing to take back our public services. We're proposing to give people more dignity and security in life, in education, in work. We are proposing a different Britain, a better Britain. It is a choice. On June the 8th, I'm hoping that everyone's going to make that choice and they're going to choose hope. If you choose hope, vote Labour.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. We've heard from all six of the people that want to be your MP after the 8th of June. So, time to go to our first question of the night now. It's from John Peckham, who is the principal here at Cowes Enterprise College. John, are you around? Brilliant. And while we find you, Priscilla Beatty, can you pop your hand up as well? Are you in the crowd here? Priscilla Beatty, are you with us? She's not. We will ask Priscilla's question, in which case, let's prepare for...
George
Rowing.
Oh, where
Rowing. Is she? Sorry, where's Priscilla?
We found you.
Lovely. All right, okay, Priscilla, great. We're coming to you next. But first, let's come to John.
Thank you. Good evening. As part of my job, I meet head teachers both from the island and up and down the country. Many of them describe waking up in the night in a cold sweat, not knowing how to balance their budgets without seriously damaging the quality of the education that they provide at the moment. Can I ask the candidates, firstly, whether they really understand the extent and scale of the education funding crisis at the moment, and secondly, what their party's approach would be to solving it?
John Peckham, thanks very much indeed. So the way this is going to work is each candidate will have 1 minute uninterrupted, strictly uninterrupted, to answer the question. After that, we'll have a little bit more time to discuss the matter further. Go back to John, feel like it's been answered properly. We're going to rotate the candidates as we go through the night. And question number one, we're going to start with Julie Jones-Evans, who's independent. Julie, your minute to answer that starts now.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for that question. Yes, balancing the budget. You know, I think what's happening is that education has been turned into a business. It's been politicised, and that just shouldn't happen. Education is so fundamental to our well-being and our futures. How can you make a business out of it? I think it's been demonstrated just locally at Sandown Bay. You know, it's been really in sharp focus what's going on there, that, you know, business and education in that case certainly hasn't worked. And I also understand that there's a crisis in teachers. People are going into teaching and not staying. They're coming out after 5 years quite often. So there's that crisis of staffing as well. And how would I approach to heal it, to rectify it? by depoliticising it, making sure you've got proper funding so you can actually focus on delivering education. And in my manifesto, I've written about a balanced education, getting that balance between vocational and educational.
Julie, thank you. Okay. That's your minute. Thank you, Julie. So, second to answer that question, for the Liberal Democrats, Nick Belfitt.
Thank you. I've been a trainee teacher this year. I've been training, which actually is quite a good thing because I've had the experience of being able to go to lots of different types of lessons and seeing lots of different things being a trainee teacher rather than just stuck in one lesson. And what I've seen is from all teachers saying the same thing. We need funding. And that isn't a scandalous thing to say. They need the money to buy the resources to be able to go out and do the teaching. Teachers want good jobs, but they also want good resources so they can teach their students. So the Liberal Democrats are proposing an extra $7 billion a year into schools, which we'll pay for by an increase in corporate tax, okay, up to 20%. That money will go, $25 million of it will come to the Isle of Wight to help support pupil premiums and basically giving schools the funding, because that's the simple answer here. They need funding, and we can't keep cutting and cutting until we've got nothing left. Buildings are rotting now. It's time to change course. It's time to give them some money.
Thank you, Nick. And now, Bob Seeley.
Thank you very much indeed. In the next minute, I'm going to try to do three things. I'm going to try to defend government policy, explain why this is happening, but also, firstly, John, thank you very much indeed for the work that you do and for the work that all teachers do on the Isle of Wight. We are driving up standards. Since 2010, another 1.8 million children are now in schools rated outstanding or good. So there is a drive to improve standards, and that drive is working. Here on the Isle of Wight, in 4 years, we have pledged, the County Council, the Conservative-controlled County Council, has pledged that all schools would be good and a quarter of those schools will be outstanding. As regards to the financing, there is a very simple balance between what we can save and what we can raise in tax and what we spend on public services. And this is always going to be a painful balance. But let me quote one figure tonight, which I think we're going to be going to back on repeatedly. The interest payments on debt is £39 billion a year in this country. And that is at the back of everyone's mind when it comes to public services and paying for those public services.
That's your minute. Thank you very much indeed. Bob Seeley for the Conservative Party. So next up to answer the question for UKIP, Daryl Pitcher.
Yes, thank you for the question. The problem with education really stems from the reforms that the Conservatives pushed through a few years back, whereupon you were able to set up free schools and the academisation programme. And the problem with this is that it's led to an increase in the number of school places available. Now, for those that aren't aware, schools get paid per pupil. So if you increase the number of places available, you actually introduce a marketplace into the school system of schools competing to try and get the pupils so that they get the money. And there's currently an oversupply of places, so there aren't enough pupils to go around, so schools find themselves in economic problems. That is, for my view, the core of the problem that education faces. I think we need to put a cap on new schools opening up so that you have, very much like house building, you have to demonstrate that there is a need for a new school before you actually build it and before you open it and create even more.
Daryl, that's your minute. Thank you very much. Daryl Pitcher for UKIP.
Thank you. Now to Vix Loudian on the education question.
As a secondary school teacher on the island since 2006, I've seen the vast changes in the last 11 years in terms of the funding. But what does that specifically look like on the island? Well, we can see that in Sandown Bay Academy, under threat of complete closure. We can see that at the Isle of Wight College, where I lost my job last year as redundant due to lack of funding, myself. We can see the bucket in the corridor outside the classroom where I currently teach collecting the water because there isn't enough funding for the actual roof. We see this inequality that we've got with school funding cuts for the island of £6 million by 2020, but certain schools on the island, no funding cuts proposed at all. We see the lack of arts subjects. So what we would propose, similar to what Nick said, is we need to reorganise corporation tax to put £7 billion of funding into our schools.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That was for the Green Party, Vix Loudian. And last to answer this particular question is Julian Critchley for Labour.
Okay, you asked whether we understood the question. I was a teacher for 11 years. My kids go to Ryde Academy. They're right in the middle of what's going on at the moment. Do I understand the question? Yes. And to be honest, keeping my cool in answering this question is going to be one of the challenges, because I read the consultation document today that said that AET, a private company, and let's not muck around, it's not a consultation. They are going to try and do this whatever we say. And they should not have our schools. And the reason they have our schools, I'm afraid, is because the Conservatives have spent 7 years vandalising the public education system. They have privatised it by stealth to academy chains who should be nowhere near our children. Academy chains like AET, who see our children as numbers on a spreadsheet instead of children in a classroom. I'm going to calm down a bit now, because as you can see, I'm fairly passionate about this. Simple answer is, we're going to take our schools back. The Labour Party will reverse Conservative school funding, and we will take our schools back and treat them as the public service that they deserve to be.
Okay, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Okay, so first off, I feel like it should be fair that we come back to John and see if you've got any follow-up to what you've heard there.
We'd just like to make one very brief comment, if I may, to Mr. Seeley. Funding has gone up for the last few years. It's now starting to go down. Standards may have risen. Standards will now start to fall because the funding no longer exists. And I think it's important to put it in that context, please.
OK, well, Bob, we'll get you to answer, but... we'll hand it over to Bob, but obviously for the other candidates as well, it's an issue that, you know, obviously you're going to differ on here. So we've got about 4 minutes to have a chat about this, so I'll hand it over to you. Bob, do you want to pick up on that first, though?
Yes, just, John, thank you very much indeed for admitting that the funding has gone up in the last few years. You wouldn't believe so listening to the other candidates. And thank you very much for also pointing out that school standards have been improving across the nation and school standards are improving in the Isle of Wight. Again, you wouldn't hear that listening to the other candidates. When it comes to Sandown Bay, unlike the other candidates who are talking, I'm doing. I've been on the phone to the Education Secretary last week, and I was on the phone to the Second Education Secretary last week as well. If it is still AET's intention to shut Sandown Bay, the first thing I do, if I have the privilege and honour of being elected as your Member of Parliament, is the following Monday, I'm in the Department of Education looking how to keep Sandown Bay open. And just on point of fact, Sandown Bay is not under threat of closure because it lacks pupils. The intake is fine for that school. It is not too small to survive as a secondary school. The problem is with the academy provider, AET, that I am very dissatisfied with, and I question whether they should be running any school on the Isle of Wight. I'm aware they are in Ryde. I want to make sure that school does well. But clearly they shouldn't be in Sandown Bay, and we need to get AET out, and we need to keep Sandown Bay up and running, and that's what my intention. Thank you.
That the other candidates might have something to say on this. Feel free to jump in, everybody.
We're not sure about the microphone being on. I'd just like to ask Mr. Seedior to make a statement that half the panel here are teachers, and you seem to be lecturing us as if, unlike the other candidates, as if we're doing our schools down. We are not doing our schools down. I work closely with Nick as a work colleague, as a teacher. I do not do my schools down. There are pupils in here in the audience today. I'm incredibly proud of their achievements. I'm not doing the Good. Schools down. I'm defending our schools from these cuts. That's what we're doing here tonight. So I'm not sure why you're patronising us like that.
I think we all want to get in on this one. This is going to be a group lynching. How dare you, Bob? How dare you tell a bunch of people, three of whom are actually teachers, that you've been doing while we've been talking? How many kids have you taught in the last 11 years?
I'm talking about saving Sandown School.
Yeah.
That's what
well,
I'm doing,
saving
Sandown School.
I'll tell you what might save Sandown School, Bob. What might save Sandown School is not developing a Conservative education system where a private company, which you gave the school to, your party, is now saying that they can't keep it open because there are too many spare places on the island, not least because your party put in place a policy which allowed a free school to open, and now the other school is saying, well, we haven't got enough children. As you rightly say, they have got enough children. I'll tell you what they don't have enough of. They don't have enough profits. They don't have enough profits to pay their executives £250,000.
can I have a
come
point
back
of
at the end, Bob, I think, otherwise we'll be here all night.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing to Bob. You mentioned the deficit in the same sentence as our education. Our children shouldn't pay for the financial crisis. You know, what are you saying to them? You have a class of 25 children on the Isle of Wight. Seven of them will be in child poverty. This is the reality. And don't deprive them of their education.
Okay, Nick Belfort. Briefly, please.
Yep. I just want to say, Bob's right that the funding did go up, but that was because you had a sensible coalition partner who had tried to make the funding go up. And then, I'll admit, we went a little bit along with your plan, and then after we realised, actually, you know what, it's not working, it's time to learn our lessons, let's change it. Well, we changed our plan, and we're going to give the finances that the teachers need. Maybe it's time that you got with our plan. Thank you.
Brief rebuttal from Bob Seeley or Daryl, did you want to say something?
If I may. On the issue of Sandown Bay Academy itself, because I think that's the most important local issue, and I think that's the one that's going to impact most on islanders in general, and it should be at the forefront of everybody's mind in this election. I was in a council meeting a couple of months ago when this issue started to boil to the surface, and it was one that unfortunately Bob wasn't in, so we won't remember this. And I asked a question of our officers in the council. It was one of the management meetings, and I asked a question of our council officers what would happen if exactly this did happen, this proposal for amalgamation did happen. And I was reassured to find out that we would hopefully be able to take the school back, because we do still own it, so they can't sell it. So we can take it back and then we can find another provider, which hopefully has got the pupils' interests at heart. So far from being the only person that's done something about this, I can assure you that several people have been negotiating on this and talking about this and looking for a way forward for some considerable time. So, and I think it does come down to funding at the end of the day.
Thank you, Darrell. Yeah. Bob, very quickly back with any rebuttal you want to come back and then we move on.
Just to correct Julian, one factual point. One may or may not like AET, and frankly, I don't like AET. But this is not a profit-making organisation. It's a not-for-profit
trust. It's
got a chief
executive paying himself £250,000 a year and shutting a school because it says it's got a deficit of £200,000 a year.
Okay.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. All right, thank you very much. I know it's a subject dear to a lot of people's hearts and we could be here all night talking about it, but unfortunately we don't have time. Lots of questions to get through. I'm going to apologies if I get your name wrong here, but George Rowing or Rowing? George at the back here. Okay, so Annabelle's going to head towards you, George. You're the next but one. But first, we're going to come to Priscilla Beatty.
Sorry.
Priscilla, just have one more go at the question there. If we can't hear you, I've got it here so I can read it out for you, but have one more go with the microphone.
Try again. Theresa May exhorts the public to follow her like a general his troops before a battle, but the vote for Brexit did not result in a landslide. The margin was very narrow. Hard Brexit should not be used to railroad the 48%. Where do the candidates stand on this issue?
Thank you, Priscilla. Okay, so quick read of that question then. Theresa May exhorts the public to follow her like a general his troops before a battle, but the vote for Brexit did not result in a landslide. The margin was very narrow. Hard Brexit should not be used to railroad the 48%. Where do the candidates stand on this issue? It's question number two. We're going to work our way along the line as we go. Before you start, Nick, can I just remind everyone to talk directly into the microphones just so that we get you fully and clearly. First to answer this particular question for the Liberal Democrats is Nick Belfort.
Well, I'm one of the 48%. I've not had my voice listened to We, the Liberal Democrats, are fighting to make sure that everyone's voice is listened to by offering a second referendum on the negotiation that was given. It's right that people should have a voice because 48% of the country isn't being listened to, and we believe that everyone should be listened to. It's not a mandate on Theresa May to have a hard Brexit. It was never in the proposal. Nigel Farage went around telling everyone it's going to be the Norway model. If you had a mandate, then the Conservative Party, the first thing they would have done is brought out a negotiation that's going to have 350 million. What I want to know is Bob Seeley telling us that that's going to be on the mandate? Because if it's not, then we definitely should get another vote for it. The Liberal Democrats have been chastised by the media by saying we want a revote or this and that. We haven't. We're standing up for the 48% who feel victimised, left out of this society, and who want a proper vote on this negotiation, on this deal. And we believe in giving them that vote.
OK, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Bob Seeley next on this one.
Thank you very much indeed. I was one of the majority on the island, the 62% who voted to leave. I'm proud to have done so because I think it was the best interest of our country. However, we now need to get on with it and make the best of it. We need the right Brexit and not a hard or a soft Brexit. I'm not quite sure what these terms mean. I want a Brexit where we retake control of our borders, and beyond that, we have the freest possible and closest possible, possible association with the European Union without being part of the European Union. I'm half English, my dad's English, my mum's German, and they were both shaped by World War II and not in a good way. I am very well aware of the miseries and tragedies of the failure of Europeans to work together. But wanting peace in Europe, wanting close cooperation with Europe, wanting the right treaty for Britain is different from wanting to be in the European Union. So I'm glad we're leaving, and now we need to get the right deal for our country. And I trust Theresa May more than the other candidates to deliver that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob Seeley, for the Conservative Party. Next up on this occasion for UKIP, Daryl Pitcher.
Yes, thank you. With regards to Theresa May, and you said that she expects everyone to just follow her like a general into battle. Well, I've got absolutely no idea where she's actually going, to be absolutely honest with you, so I don't intend to follow her anywhere. Now, when it comes to the actual vote, and this is where I do take issue, there was a democratic vote. It was 52 to 48%. That is the result. That is what the people of this country said. And anyone that's got an issue with that is trying to overturn the democratic decision of the people of this country, including the 62%, as Bob said, of people on the Isle of Wight that voted to leave. So your voice was listened to. Let's not pretend that it wasn't. It was. And what I say to the people that feel disenchanted with the situation is, come on, let's try and make this a success. Let's try and get the best deal for Britain. We're going to become an independent country again. This can be a good thing, but only if we all do it together.
Theresa May's style of politics on this is a megaphone style of politics. The general analogy is particularly good, but we don't need a general. We need a doctor. You know, our country needs listening to, it needs to be cared for. We need to protect the right to reside for those 3.3 million EU nationals who are living and working and having their families here immediately. And we need to protect the right of the 1.2 UK residents who are living in the EU, members of my family, and they need their rights protected. Hard Brexit seems to be what is Theresa May's style of Brexit. And that is no single market, no freedom of movement, little protection for rights, and as Daryl said, and I agree with Daryl, no particular plan. So what we need to do is to ensure that the people have that decision at the end of this process, and that the people can decide whether we leave, whether we don't, how we leave is the more important thing to do.
That's Vix Lowthy, and thank you very much, Vix. On now to Julian Critchley for the Labour Party.
Thanks, I've been looking forward to this one. I'm not sure that anyone can give a fair answer to a Brexit question in 60 seconds. It's a very big issue for our country. The Labour Party's view, and as you know, most people in the Labour Party voted Remain, we campaigned for Remain, but the Labour Party's view is the vote happened, the vote went the way it did, and as a result, we now have to make the best of that. And that's what the Labour Party's manifesto says. It says we will make the best of it. Britain has voted to leave, we are leaving. What I worry about is that some of the, and I'll put this politely, headbangers in the Conservative cabinet seem to be determined not just to have Brexit, but to have the most damaging Brexit possible for this country. And the Labour Party says, we won't do that. We're going to prioritise protecting workers' rights, protecting environmental rights, writing those protections from European law into British law. And so when we have Brexit, we get the best deal for all of us. That's 60 seconds. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Julian. And finally on this subject, Julie Jones-Evans.
Thank you. The politicians let us down, in my view. There was no plan B because they didn't believe we were going to vote to leave. But the voiceless, the silent majority spoke out in that moment and they just weren't ready. This isn't a battle, this is about negotiation. And I wouldn't go into any negotiation saying I'm going to be difficult woman. You just don't do that. You go in and you stand up for your country, you stand up for the people, you stand up for workers' rights, and above all, trade as well. That's what we voted for back in the early 70s, well, not me, but many people here. And that's what it was about. It's about a common market. It's about getting back to those values and not the federalism that we were heading towards. So if it was a marriage, I wanted to go to relate and have a chat about it. I didn't want to go straight to the expensive lawyers.
Patricia, did you find those interesting responses to your question? Priscilla, sorry. No comment. Right, OK.
Well, in that case, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you all agree we don't need to debate. No, I think not. All right, well, we'll open it up for a little more debate. It won't mean anything to you if you're listening at home on Isle of Wight Radio, by the way, but in terms of the microphones, David over there in the corner's doing all the magic, so just put your hand up and he will come to you, but assume that if your hand's up, your mic's live and you can go for it. I don't know who wants to start this particular one. Yeah. To Nick.
Okay. Well, we've heard, Conservatives say they don't know what hard Brexit is. UKIP saying we're not sure what hard Brexit. Labour Party saying, well, we want to get the best deal. But then it's very clear. None of us know what the Brexit deal is. So why don't we just let the people decide what the best deal is, get them to vote on it, and go out and then pick the best decision that's for everybody, rather than trying to say... Because you obviously don't believe in it, Bob. If you're not sure what hard Brexit is, because Theresa May's very... made it clear what she thinks it's going to be. She's saying, well, we've got to, if it's not a good deal, it's going to be no deal. If that's what she's been saying, and you don't believe in it, then let the people decide what the best outcome is. That's what we're saying. We're not saying redo the referendum. What we're saying is, let's vote for destination. Please, let's have a vote on that, because that's what the people want. Put the negotiation on the table and let's see what happens.
Carol, you had your hand up. You want to add to that?
Thank you. Nick, I do know what hard Brexit means. It's very clear, and it does mean leaving the single market, and it does mean ending free movement of people. That was very clearly laid out in just about all the literature on both sides of the argument, including the £9 million booklet that came around from the government trying to scare everybody. It was very clearly laid out. There cannot have been any misunderstanding of that issue. On the rights of EU workers, my party launched their manifesto today, and included in that is a pledge to protect the right of all current EU nationals who were living here before the vote, and in a reciprocal arrangement looking after all the UK nationals that were living in the continent at the time, and I think that's right and proper. A hard Brexit, we've got six tests laid out in our manifesto, which, if you look at, will exactly tell you. I won't go through them all now, I could do, but I won't. But they're there in the manifesto for those that really want it. And in my mind, that lays out exactly what hard Brexit is. So, yes, some people do know what we're talking about.
Okay, we've got a Facebook message from David Goodall. And he says that people voted to leave, but not how. What's the panel's views on that?
I don't want to refight the referendum campaign here today. You know, there was a decision, and we do have to move on from that. Although, you know, I think Nick's got a valid argument. Whether the British people will vote for that valid argument in this election, I don't know. But it is a valid argument. For me, my main concern about Brexit, and I do think it's a very complex issue, is there are two sides to this negotiation, and it seems very clear to me that the side with all the other countries on has got a much bigger and stronger hand than we do when it comes to deciding the outcome of this. And we need to work with them. We need to work with them in a negotiation which gets the best deal. And what I'm really worried about how Theresa May, perhaps egged on by what has become a really rabid right-wing press, talking about saboteurs and traitors, what I'm worried about is that she seems to have started by trying to just antagonise the people who we are going to have to ask for concessions from. You know, it is. I mean, I saw a statement from Craig Murray, the ex-British ambassador today, who said, you know, that Theresa May is literally the last person he would send into an international negotiation because she's almost guaranteed to have everyone else in the room hating her before she's finished her opening statement. And you know, that was a serious point. It is a serious point. Diplomacy is best not conducted by people shouting at each other. Diplomacy, particularly of this sort in Europe, is best conducted by people being reasonable with each other. And you know, I know the Tories are going to say, and that's their entire election, strong and stable, vote for Theresa May, she can negotiate Brexit. I wouldn't put Theresa May in to negotiate with AET over Sandown Bay Academy.
Anyone else want to jump in there? We've got about 30 seconds more, but we will literally have to squeeze in. Julie, then Bob.
Yeah, just really quickly. For me, it's about business. How do businesses plan with so much uncertainty? You know, what are our farmers and our fishermen? How do they see their future? Because Theresa May has already said she's going to save the car industry, but at what cost? You know, what is the future? We just can't plan. No wonder people are planning to move out of this country and set up elsewhere.
Going to be conducting negotiations on the 9th of June. You have a choice of two. Theresa May, who I hope will have the support of the country, or Jeremy Corbyn, who doesn't even have the support of 174 MPs in his own party who tried to get rid of him. It is your choice. Thank you.
Okay. Candidates, we're going to move on there, I think. Unfortunately, we have run out of time on that particular question. Now, I'm going to ask Richard Winter to pop your hand up. Are you here somewhere? Just here. Someone's going to make their way. Colin's making their way over to you. Meanwhile, to the back of the room, to Annabel, and she's standing next to George Rowing. As in the boat, lovely. George Rowing, what's your question this evening? George, we can't hear you, I'm afraid, at the moment. Would you like me to read it out for you? You can if you like. It doesn't
so I'm
come
interested,
out.
I'm interested in how you see your role as our MP. If you were elected to Parliament, would you see your role as voting the way in which your constituents want, or voting for what you think is right and best for the Isle of Wight and the country? If the former, then how are you going to take account of the expert opinions and views and information that you will have as an MP? And if the latter, then at what point will you stand down because you no longer represent your constituency?
Hear through that. It was very impressive, George. So, if you were to be elected to Parliament, candidates, would you see your role as voting as your constituents want, or as voting how you think is right and best for them and the country? If the former, how do you take account of the detailed evidence and advice from the experts? If the latter, at which point do you stand down when you depart from what your constituents believe? This time round, first to answer, and your minute starting now is for the Conservatives, Bob Seeley.
Thank you very much indeed for your question, sir. The first point is that you look after your residents, and so you make sure that you take care of them. So when they write to you with problems, you do your best to help them. Secondly, if I was to have the privilege of being a Member of Parliament, I think on the Isle of Wight in particular, because of our unique circumstance, it is critical that we work very closely with the Council and with the Council group to open doors in Westminster and Whitehall and in government to unlock government funding for our island and for investment in our island. And thirdly, when it comes to the balance between what the island wants and your conscience, I mean, Edward Burke, the great 18th century philosopher, said an MP owes his electors his diligence, his or her diligence, but also his conscience also. So it depends on what issue that you are thinking about, where the mass representation or the mass opinion of the island lies. And in many cases, people are very divided on many of those issues. Thank you very much.
I think it's very clear. For me, it's very simple. If you vote for me on June the 8th, I will be going there primarily to represent the Isle of Wight. I've lived on this island for longer than I care to remember. I wasn't actually born here, but I moved here when I was a small child. So I grew up, I went through all the schools, I've lived here basically all my life. I've worked across the country, but I'm an islander. Like, this is what I feel. And I'm there to represent you. Now, I can't say that everyone's always going to agree with every decision that I make. That would be impossible. As Bob said, so many issues, it's sort of 50-50. We'll go back to the EU issue, 49-52. Sometimes it is difficult. But I think you have to go with the majority wherever possible. There are some issues when that isn't possible because, as you say, you receive expert advice, which the public aren't aware of. And if there's ever a case where I make a decision that is against what people want, I will explain it, and I think that's the way forward.
Thank you.
That was one of the longest questions I've heard, but thank you very much. It's looking at some very key issues about, are we representing our island or are we representing our party? And what's very important about Green MPs is that they represent the area they are in. There is no whip for Green MPs. They can represent their actual area. What we are particularly concerned about is that if we have a Conservative-led council, a Conservative MP and a Conservative government, where is the voice for the island? Where is the voice for the island when the MP here is doing the job of the government and making sure that what affects the island, what the government has told them to do is going to affect the island? We have to elect a fiercely independent green voice because the Isle of Wight is green. It's green in terms of business, in terms of employment, in terms of countryside, in terms of protections that we need. We need a new way of doing this politics. And so I really think that the question that you're asking is an important one that all of us have to face, whether we represent a party
or not. Okay, thank you, Vix. Your time's up. And we move on to Julian Critchley.
Okay, Vic, you taught a bit of history, haven't you?
Yes.
The Black Death? What do we call it when one person whips themselves?
Flagellant.
A flagellant, that's right.
Jesuits.
The reason the Green Party doesn't have a party whip is it doesn't have a party in Parliament. It's got a Caroline Lucas, that's just
that's
the one.
Not true. It's actually down in our policies and our constitution.
Excellent. I stand corrected. It's a major force. Now, I'm not going to say this very often, so make the most of it. I agree with Bob. Bob gave a very scholarly and very sensible answer to this question. I think we have to be honest in these elections. There is a tendency for people to stand and suggest they're going to be elected as a sort of mini dictator for the Isle of Wight Republic. In actual fact, we are standing for national parties in a general election, and so there is always going to be an issue about party loyalties, and there's an issue about local loyalties. And that's our parliamentary democracy. That's what every MP faces, and I'm sure we'll face it in the same way.
Julian Critchley for Labour, thank you very much indeed. Next up, independent Julie Jones-Evans.
Thank you, George, for the question. Well, it's a question very dear to my heart, because that's why I'm standing here as an independent, the only person on this platform this evening that is independent, that will just be the voice for the island. You know, I grew up here, I went to school here, I've got businesses here, my family's here, this is my home, and that's why I'm standing here. I haven't decided to go and stand as a parliamentary candidate elsewhere, like others have chosen to do. I want to stand for the island and be that voice. Now, as a county councillor, of course, you have to always have that balance with, you know, your residents' needs and the needs of the island as well. And you do find that balance by talking to each other. And most of the time, people just need to be listened to, so they've really been heard. And that's what I'm good at. That's why we've got two of these and one of these. I like, so a person of action as well and getting things done. So if I am that MP, if I am your, I will be that independent voice, and there'll be no party politics involved. I'll just be going out to bat for the island.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Nick?
Well, I think that there can be, like I said earlier, a connection between national and local politics. And I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm a Lib Dem, and I'm not going to hide the fact that there will be sometimes that I will have to vote, you know, that we'll have to vote for things that I might know are the interests of the island, but other people might see it the other way around. Steve Ross used to do that. He used to sometimes fight for the island, and he used to also sometimes fight for the Liberal Democrats. And you have to be able to balance the two. I've always promised that I will try my hardest to come out for the best outcomes for both the island and for the national politics. But the best thing is that we live in a democracy. You know, we have things like the Fixed Term Act, which allows us to vote a new government in every 5 years. So it's up to you. If I haven't done a good enough job, then get rid of me. But all I can do then is promise that I will fight as hard as I can, so when that election comes next time, you people feel ready again to put me back into place. And that's something that I will pledge to do, to make sure that I will continue fighting for the island as much as I can, and I will be fighting as a Liberal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, candidates. So that concludes our individual answering sessions, which means it's time for a little more debate. Did you agree with what everyone else was saying? Who wants to jump in? Vix.
I think it really shows a problem that we have with our democracy. We've had an MP here for the last 17 years who so represented the whole island that he had to step down 3 weeks ago because he wasn't representing a huge section of our community. I think it's really highlighted with that particular MP, but across the board, that we've got an issue with the way our democracy is structured. And what we need to do is not just look at proportional representation, I'm not going to go in a big rant about that, but an ability to recall your MP if up to 40% of the electorate decide that's what we need to do. We don't have that voice. You know, once you have your MP there, they are there for 5 years. You've got to think about it very carefully, but I'd like to see a change in the way we do that and have recall of MPs. It's very important.
Thank you, Vix. Julian, you want to make a point?
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, actually, I'm fully in line with the Green Party on this. I believe in proportional representation. I think we should have a voting reform. I made a joke earlier on, which was a cheap shot, I'll be honest, about Caroline Lucas, but the Greens should have more MPs in Parliament because they deserve it based on the number of votes that they've got. And I think... And I think we do need to reform our voting system. We do need to maintain the constituency link, which is clearly a very important part of the British political system. But there are ways...
Julian?
Yeah,
the problem is, though, when we did have an electoral reform referendum, your party decided not to support our party in trying to get that changed. So why all of a sudden the change? It's when you're losing that you want change, but when you're winning, that's it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Nick. And if I want to go back further, in 1997, we had the Roy Jenkins Commission, which recommended electoral reform, and Tony Blair found himself with a massive majority and decided that the best place for that commission was on a shelf. And that was, in my view, one of the biggest mistakes that the Tony Blair government actually made. I thought that was the wrong decision and we shouldn't do it. And what I'm pleased to see is in our manifesto this time, although there isn't an explicit...
There's no mention of proportional representation in the entire manifesto.
Although there isn't.
There isn't any. So please don't give the impression that,
although there isn't
you
an explicit commitment to proportional representation, what no. there is a constitutional convention which is going to be gathered together with all the different parties, all the different interest groups, local and national governments, and it's considering the entire constitution of the UK in the round, including the House of Lords, representation in England, and whether we need an English Parliament, and proportional representation will be part of that, because you can't have that discussion without talking about the voting system.
Okay, thanks, Julian. We had a lot of hands going up down the line there, and in order, Bob, then Daryl, then Julie.
Thanks, Alan. Very briefly, any MP worth his or her salt should always put their constituency first, regardless of their political affiliation. The point of being part of a party is that actually sometimes it enables you to deliver. And that's what I want to do if given the chance for the island. Secondly, as regards Andrew's comments, I disassociated myself from them incredibly clearly at my selection. And I said if anyone agreed with them, they were not to vote for me. I said, don't vote for me, which is not a clever thing to do if you want to get votes. And I got an overwhelming majority on the first round. So I think that comment is now historic, and I have a mandate to move us forward, and I'm proud that I'm doing so. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Quickly to Daryl, then.
Yes, on two issues. Recall of MPs is in the UKIP manifesto as well, as is a commitment to proportional representation. We feel very strongly that the democratic process needs significant reform, because the votes of the people... in fact, the referendum was the only time, really, that it was a straight fight, one way or the other. Most of the time, the votes cast and the outcomes are not the same. So we are very much in favour of reform of that. What I would say to Nick, when he was talking earlier on, it seemed like some grade A Liberal Democrat fence-sitting, as he was going to have it both ways. He was going to represent the people and represent his party all at one time. Sometimes you have to make a decision and come down one way or the other, Nick. You can't always sit on the fence.
Thank you. Julie, quickly.
Yes, Nick, you mentioned Steve Ross, you know, a couple of times this evening already, and I think he is probably our best-loved MP, someone who really did fight for the island. And he actually started off, if you realise this, he started off as an independent. He ran his own campaign with a couple of friends, his wife, and they went round the Isle of Wight in their Land Rover, which is kind of what I'm doing now, no party machine behind me, and doing it on a shoestring just for the help of my friends and family. So I think, you know, Hats off to the way Steve conducted himself, and he's a great legacy for as an MP.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Well, you might be surprised to know that we are already rapidly approaching 8 o'clock. Thank you very much indeed to all the candidates there.
Yeah, thanks very much to everybody. We're going to take a quick break here at Cowes Enterprise College to allow everybody to draw a breath. We've only got through three questions, and this has been a fantastic debate. By the way, any donations for parking tonight would be welcomed by Cowes Enterprise College. We make no comments about school budgets, but there will be some buckets around the place where you could put in a few coppers or bits of silver or nickel or whatever metal it would be to support this fantastic school who've hosted us tonight.
And also, ladies and gentlemen, before you all jump up, there are some refreshments at the back there. We are going to need you all, though, to be sat back down at 8:15 in order for us to carry on, but help yourselves in the meantime. Meanwhile, while we do that, if you're listening on Isle of Wight Radio this evening, good evening to you. And if you've been following proceedings on Facebook Live this evening, thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight. You can hear the hubbub of people rushing off to the refreshments. I hope there are some cakes left by the time we get there. In the meantime, I'm going to hand you over to Jamie White, to Paul Topping from Isle of Wight Radio, and the Isle of Wight County Press's David Newbell. They're going to be poring over some of the analysis of what we've heard so far. And there's a quick break. Alan and I will be back in a few minutes' time.